I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So we're back now for another segment of I Was There When. This is where we speak to people who were on the scene during a big moment in New Zealand's history. But tonight's I Was There When is slightly different because the moment we wanted to talk about might not have actually happened. For the past few weeks, the Knights team has been trying to find out if the Victoria University Students Association donated $2,000 to the North Vietnamese guerrilla movement, the Viet Cong, for the purchase of a tank. This claim is made on the association's website as part of its history, but even they are not sure where it came from. There is scant evidence of this purchase. Save for a meeting on July the 3rd, 1972. But there is no record of a tank, only a $2,000 donation to the Vietnam Aid Appeal. By the way, $2,000 in 1972 is equivalent to around about $32,000 now. Peter Gullen is a lawyer in Wellington, and Peter was president of the Students' Association at the time. And so we thought he would know exactly what had happened. So earlier this evening, I put it to him straight. Peter, I said, did the Victoria University Students Association send money to the Viet Cong to buy a tank?
No, they'd never have done that because students would have been in an uproar if there was a suggestion of it. It was money. The controversial part of the money was that it was to go to both sides. It was for the medical aid appeal, it was called. And the way it came about was that the AGM, which is a small meeting of a couple of 100 to 200 students, someone had given notice of motion of giving $500 to the medical aid appeal, and that was on the notice boards. Everyone knew about that, but at the meeting they amended it twice to go to $2,000, and that was carried. And then a group of law students went down to a law firm, Watson Patterson, and got a legal opinion to say that the notice calling the meeting was misleading, and that many people might have come if they knew $2,000 was to be voted on, but they assumed it was $500, and therefore it was misleading. And they had a fair point. I agreed with what the lawyers were saying, so we agreed. As an executive, we're having an executive meeting when a huge crowd turned up with this legal letter threatening an injunction. And we said, no, look, we'll call a special general meeting and you go out and campaign and the people that want the money to go could do the same. And that happened about 2 weeks later, but it meant we had a huge crowd of maybe 2,000 students. It was huge. Could hardly fit them in, and it was a real logistics nightmare to know how to get them all to vote at a meeting.
I bet. Look, take me back. So 1972 it is. The Vietnam War is going on. We're also in the throes of sort of a Western world countercultural movement. Universities really, you know, protests against the war cropping up all around the world. Why, when and why does this reach your radar as president of the Students' Association?
I was quite active in the different movements that were going on. I wasn't just a sort of narrow law student. I was in a group called the Student Christian Movement, which was across the board sort of, and a lot of the people there were active in protests and different things. And it was a sort of dreamy time with Baxter and the dream of a different world where people were much more kind to one another, and communes were talked, there were communes about, and there was, as you say, quite a counterculture, as well as a sort of sense of deep disappointment about the justification for the Vietnam War, which I suppose people believed initially, and then came to the conclusion that the position that we were in really didn't have the support of the people in Vietnam.
What about when we think about the student body at that sort of point in time? You know, there are, you know, the communism versus capitalism war is still very much going on at this point in time, right? And
only really by a small number, though.
Right.
Communism was never took off, and the people there were little groups that formed. Workers' Communist League seemed to get quite a few, the Socialist Action League, the SUP, but they never got very many. People were too sceptical of actually joining them, and I think as time wore on, they saw more about how communism was playing out and whatever their motherland was of the competing powers. So it never really took off, but the counterculture movement certainly did.
Yeah.
And that was people... people believing that we needed to have a more caring way of life, and people needed to support one another, support the people at the bottom. It was that was quite a strong movement, I think. But the ideology of communism, people had talk about it and have little secret groups and that, where everyone knew most of the people in it anyway. But it never took off.
And so this, because, you know, the Student Association does end up sending money to Vietnam, but as you said before, it is for medical aid, yeah?
Yeah, I took the check down. I said to Gary Irwin, who was our treasurer, he'll be a traditional accountant somewhere in the country now, but he signed it, and I said as soon as, if the resolution's carried, of course it was lost, that's the end of it, but if it's carried, I said I'm going to take it down to the medical aid appeal people, and you know, implement the decision rather than sort of malinger and have more writs threatened and people, you know, get the argument sort of going on interminably. That was the meeting where whatever the decision, whatever the democracy was of that meeting, I was going to action, and I did.
What was the argument about? Because, you know, instinctively I would think giving money to medical aid for both sides in a conflict that's ongoing would be a relatively uncontroversial thing for a student body to do.
Well, there were two arguments against it. Yeah, I that was my view. But there were two arguments against it. One was that we shouldn't be giving money to communists, to the other side, when we'd been fighting them. Other people could do that, but it wasn't for us to do it. And the second argument was that the money shouldn't be used for political causes. We were using people's money. There were probably, I don't know, 10 or 15,000 students there. They weren't all going to come and vote, although they could. But the argument would be that the money shouldn't be used for that. It's not anticipated that it'll be given in that quantity to a mixed cause. So those were the arguments.
Do you think, you know, we've talked about how this was a point in time for the countercultural movement, but do you think that maybe an element of this was that the student body was still learning how to wield and exercise its collective power when it comes to political issues like this?
No, I don't think that decision was that. I think it was a compassionate decision on the part of the majority, but they would feel that when they had marches. And I remember the Germaine Greer march, where she was prosecuted for saying bullshit, and we all marched down to the police station and chanted it. But it was those sort of things were exercising power, and having teach-ins on the Vietnam War were presenting a sort of anti-war picture at it. Those were exercising power, but this wasn't. This was just on the part of those who wanted to give the money, it was more of a compassionate decision, just like it would be for Gaza today, where a lot of people are unhappy with what's happening in Gaza and are giving, would feel that there should be aid and support for the people there.
Now, a few months before this all happened, this is interesting, you accused the Security Intelligence Services of enrolling its officers at the university. How did that come about?
I can't remember that now. I suppose they did. Was that...
Banks or Biggs?
Yes, the guy... There were both of those names, I remember. There was a special edition of Saline came out, didn't it, I think? Yes, those were two names that I remember from back then. And we were... we just felt that we didn't want to be under the feeling that people were spying on us, although I'm sure that happened anyway.
Yeah,
but and we caught them at doing that, and so we made a big fuss. Yeah, that's right. I remember that now.
What an amazing time it must have been to be so engaged in student politics, that sort of early to mid-70s period. Are there other things that happened in your time that stick in the mind?
Yeah, there was another huge meeting. We used to lease the building, student union building where the student facilities were, in the university holidays to, you know, anybody that wanted to rent it, really. And there was a conference held there called the PBEC, or Pacific Basin Economic Council, which I think still exists and meets today. But it was in the height of sort of people being really excited and angry and passionate about opposing the Vietnam War. And it was during the university holidays, but some of the left-wing students discovered it. And the thing I remember is they discovered Lockheed was there, and they said, well, Lockheed's making the planes that are bombing the people, and we shouldn't let them use our building. That's an outrage. Throw them out. And Muldoon had spoken at it one night, and they all banged on the wall when he was there. But anyway, I took the rather conservative legal view that we'd entered into a contract with them and we should honour it. And so that was a very, very conservative way of looking at life, I guess. Yeah. But that's the way I looked at it. And so I stood in the with the caretaker and a few executive members in the doorway and wouldn't let the protesters invade the conference.
Wow.
And that got to the state where they then put somebody put some explosive stuff, or not really explosive, but stuff that made a bang or a smell or something on the door handles, and it was getting a bit nasty. And I was concerned that people were in danger, so I called the police, which was an outrage to do that.
Mm.
But I was concerned. And anyway, the thing got through. We got through it, but it resulted in a huge meeting to throw me and the executive out. And that resolution failed. I think we were censured. And so it was a very lively year. Very few on the executive lasted the whole year. So a chap called Don Carson was very good. He's a reporter in Wellington. I think he's in radio and that. He was a great guy. He was the sports officer. I think Don and I survived. I don't know if many others did.
True.
But, yeah, it was a very lively year, but I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was such an exciting place to be. And the students were so, they're basically very decent people and were trying to have a good impact on society and understand things better. And so I was a privilege to really, be the president there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, just finally, this was, what, more than 50 years ago now, 1972,
yeah.
Goodness me.
Yeah, it is.
And I feel like I'm probably right in saying that there is maybe a perception that students have been less politically active, less involved in protest over more recent decades. I remember Bill English 10 years ago or so saying, these students protesting in New Zealand over fee rises or something, that, you know, that they're not doing a good job. They need some Greeks to show them how to really protest.
Mm.
Obviously, now we're in a very different point in time. You have many universities in America, students are occupying swathes of them in protest against the war in Gaza. Indeed, I think that might be happening up here in Auckland at the moment.
Yeah.
Is it a good thing from your point of view to have students really heavily active in politics and making their voices heard?
Oh yeah, I thought it was wonderful. There was a cultural movement as well that people like Baxter were a part of, but it was a lot more than just him. But it was, people were passionately concerned about what was happening in the country, and it was just so full of life and interest. I think it's getting back to it a bit now because we're entering a stage in the world where we've got the makings of a world war, really, with Russia invading Ukraine, and China seems to be nibbling away everywhere. at its boundaries and that, and you do feel that the world has changed from really the golden age that I've lived in, from, you know, even back in those days. Mm. It's now moving into a world that people must be feeling much more worried about. So I think you'll probably get a lot more interest again in what's happening in the world among people. And you can see that now with the debate about, you know, whether we form an alliance and how do we protect ourselves if we don't, and, you know, do you trust these the countries that are invading? And all of those things are now live issues in people's minds. And so I think that'll lead to a lot more interest and concern about politics, really. I think you'll see, and in the universities, it'll happen there as very much as well.
Well, there you have it. The Victoria University Students Association did not raise $2,000 to help the Viet Cong buy a tank. I can't say I'm not disappointed. I am slightly disappointed, but it was...
Well, it wouldn't have been much of a tank. It wouldn't have won. Even then, I don't think you'd get the tracks.
No, exactly.
So I don't think it was ever a runner, argument.
Maybe the steering wheel. Anyway, Peter Cullen, really interesting chat. Thanks so much for your time this evening.
Okay, good night. Bye.
That was Peter Cullen busting that myth, disappointingly, that the Victoria University Students Association did not donate $2,000 to the Viet Cong to buy a tank.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.